Welcome. Ray and Tay today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Tay today.
Sports radio on the dial. Check us out. We'll make you smile. And they spit it, don't play. And we're talking nothing but the NFL and NBA. MLB, college football, college basketball. Some tennis for y'all. A little bit of golf. Maybe some hockey. Don't you understand? We'll bring back Rocky.
Let's start the show.
That's our new intro, folks. You're listening live to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and it is a beautiful Monday to talk some sports. You want to join the ride, give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, check us out on Twitter at Ray and Tay, at rayandtaytoday.com, and shoot us your emails and questions and comments talking about the the NFL draft, NBA playoffs, the Knicks, big moves today, at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Ray, let them know how we're rocking. Busy show. We got a guest.
Yes, so we got a lot of action today. We had the Boston Marathon, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Boston Strong. We had a baseball game today in Boston. We'll talk about some breaking news, including a big firing that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody in New York. And then we'll shift our focus to NBA playoffs. We'll talk about the game one. So all eight game ones are done. Five road teams won their game one. Could have been six.
Road Warriors.
Exactly. We've got a special guest, Ian Begley, ESPN's own, covers the NBA, covers the Knicks. He's got a lot of insight, a lot to talk about, so we'll have him on the show. And we'll get into it. We'll talk about NBA playoffs for the majority of the show.
Sounds good, man. So let's get it popping. First off, what's going on today with Patriots Day? Tell us, looks like the Red Sox lost, but we got some good stuff going on with the Boston Marathon.
Red Sox lost 7-6, so Baltimore went in there and took care of them. But in the Boston Marathon, your boy Meb, you know Meb from the commercials, from the shoe commercials?
Mm-hmm.
Meb,
yep.
He is the first American winner since, I think it was 83 or something like that. So Meb took it down. The winner in the, I don't even want to say his last name, Keflezighi. So he did his thing in 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 37 seconds. And in the women's, Rita Jepto of Kenya, who won last year, successfully defended her title. And she set a women's record, ran it in 2:19:59.
2:19. Wow.
Yeah, so
That's better than most men.
No, actually, 2:19 was the second place finisher. She finished in 2:18:57, so just under 2:19.
Yikes.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's great. And I heard a lot of the Red Sox players are headed over to the finish line. So hey, that Boston Strong, we salute everybody and just hope everything finishes the day with, no drama and no violence. So that sounds good. That sounds real good. So I haven't caught official word, but I tell you this, the NFL schedule will be released this week. And it looks like all the rest of the camps that weren't open with the head coaches, the new head coaches are opening up this week, today, and some tomorrow. So looks like Terrell Pryor is going to be released because they don't want to have him come into camp. And I wonder, if you think he could be a number two or maybe a three quarterback on some teams. I don't think he has the opportunity to start this season. But would you pick up Terrell Pryor from the Raiders?
It depends on your scheme. I am not a huge Terrell Pryor fan. I wasn't yet last year, even when he was winning games. I don't understand why Oakland is getting rid of him. I would imagine he knows the personnel. They know him. And so he seems like he's perfect backup in that system. Matt Schaub's been injury prone the last couple of years, but apparently he's not for them. We talked about this a little bit off air. Maybe you have him back up a mobile quarterback because mobile quarterbacks tend to get hurt more. And so you also don't want your backup to be that different from your starter. So your offensive,
right.
You know, first and second.
Maybe Seattle, the Colts, the Steelers.
Yeah,
like
all
of those
seem like viable backup jobs that he, you know, he could definitely get. I think he's a backup. I think he's one of the 64 best quarterbacks.
Oh,
definitely.
Look, I think he could potentially be better than, like, Matt Flynn and some of these other guys. Colt McCoy, please. So he could definitely get a job. Again, this is kind of interesting and kind of weird at such a young age. Ronaldo McLean retires again, who I guess he, you know, tried to
Ronaldo
come back
McLean,
with the Raiders.
Yeah.
And,
that was a quick retirement.
Yeah, kind of weird, man. Kind of definitely weird. So let's talk some baseball, you know, before we get into all the basketball talk and we have Ian join us. Obviously, we'll get into Mike Woodson being fired and all that. And before we end the show, we will get into our segment, Champs and Chumps. Don't forget about Champs and Chumps. We definitely have to, you know, big up our segment. But one thing that I thought that, you know, was interesting, and I actually have them as my one of my teams. But besides the Brewers being so dominant and hot, give some credit to the young Miami Marlins, who are, you know, kind of hot too. They won three in a row. They're almost 500, 9-10. And looks like they're trying to not finish in last place this year. And, you know, maybe kudos to them for trying to get things together in the NL East. And the one thing that I'm really noticing when you look at this baseball season, you got some, you know, a lot of guys are, you know, hitting just tar off the ball, just going crazy. But teams like San Francisco and the Dodgers and, you know, these guys are the Braves. They're getting pretty consistent pitching and timely hitting, and I think that's what the Red Sox had last year to win it all in St. Louis. And you got to believe because of that, these teams that are sort of seeming like guys are playing, you know, like the baseball card or above it, whether it's the Oakland A's, you know, even maybe the Tigers who are starting to warm up. It seems like they were a little off, but now 9-6, they're starting to get it together, won two in a row. You know, that maybe you'll see these teams start to really pull away and you know, have good seasons. Are you excited about the Yankees and their start at 11-8 and the pitching looking kind of strong?
Yeah, so I think the Yankees have some issues that will play themselves out towards the end of the season. If Nova goes down, that's a big blow. He might need Tommy John surgery. And also this old roster, I think, will break down second half of the season. I mean, I look at Jeter, Beltran, Soriano, you know, Teixeira, CeCe. I mean, these are all older guys, and I think
even Gardner's getting older now.
Yeah, Gardner's probably at his prime. Jacoby Ellsbury's a guy who's been injury-prone. He's not really, you know, 31. So I'm just fearful that the second half of the season is going to catch up to the Yankees. But, you know, so far so good. If you can put together a great first half. And you know what? The great thing about the American League is that you have that DH. So Ichiro, I mean, it seems like we have four DHs, right? Between Ichiro and potentially Beltran on certain
Soriano.
Days, Jeter and Soriano. These guys really should just be DHing at this point in their career. But you do have the DH. You do have three outfield positions. So at least Girardi's got some, you know, place to stash players and rest them a little bit. But, you know, the team that blows me away is the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, I still look at them at the best record in baseball, 14-5. Did you see that whole thing with Carlos Gomez the other day?
Yeah, man. Listen, those are my champs, man. Listen, what the Brewers are doing, and I'm not, you know, we're both kind of old school.
Did you see the fight, though, with Gomez and the pitcher?
Yeah, no. I saw it. Listen.
Baseball players are too sensitive, you know?
They're very sensitive.
They're like,
that's sensitive.
An unwritten rule. Well, write the rule down. If you don't want
to
be hot
dogging. You know what's crazy, right? They let you fight in hockey. Baseball guys just got – you can't do anything in basketball or the NFL. It's like, you know, And it's so funny, there's like this weird morality in the country, right? If basketball players get into this big fight, it is like, stop the world, what's wrong with our society? Hockey and baseball, they can kiss or kill each other,
right?
And sometimes poor fighting, and it's like, oh, these guys are just, you know, it's just, they're being guys. That
right.
That's the one thing in sports that I would say, we got to stop that. We got to stop that. You know, that's ridiculous. I just think fighting should be bad in every sport. Like, what's the difference of the sport? You know, you can't have that. I think that's just, it's foolishness to me, man. It's foolishness.
Right. If you want to fight, go box.
Yeah, definitely. And of
Get
course, Meriwether's coming up with his fight. Now I'm hoping he wins, and then the two of them can just, him and Pacquiao can get that going. And
well,
just
so what's interesting,
maybe,
I heard today from on ESPN, Stephen A. Smith was talking about how his sources, and he believes that Mayweather can't stand Bob Arum. And before Mayweather Productions,
oh, yeah, definitely,
he used to work with Bob Arum. Now, Bob Arum and Pacquiao have a contract that expires, I think, at the end of the year. So that's why people are thinking that if Pacquiao goes solo or goes with a different promoter, then Mayweather and Pacquiao can do this deal, and they might be able to fight next spring. So in a year from now, they'll be able to finally fight. Now, the problem is Pacquiao will be, what, 36, and Mayweather will be 38, 39?
Yeah, they're going to fight each other from their wheelchairs. I mean, you know, I don't know.
And they'll still each make $40, $45 million. That's what's crazy. And they'll do nothing for the sport of boxing because it'll be on pay-per-view. And they'll just promote it themselves and get paid. And so the Pacquiao camp
get
and the Mayweather
paid, cool
camp
in
will
the
do
shade,
great.
Drink some lemonade. Yeah. No, I feel you. Let me ask you this. Before we get talking to the NBA and everything, man, I'm getting hyped up. You know, our NBA draft, I keep saying NBA, the NFL draft special's coming up. We'll preview it on May 5th. I think Rain Tay, we're going to hook you up with a mock draft. Whether we do the first 10 or we do the whole thing, we'll mock it out for you because everybody does a mock. But the one thing I'm getting fascinated about are certain teams, right? We're going to have to, you know, figure out, and maybe we'll have people email and see what they think. These 9 quarterbacks that are all going to be sort of drafted, like what teams will they go to? Where will they be placed? Because to me, that's what's so fascinating. Everybody thinks about, you know, the 5 obvious, the Raiders, Jaguars, Texans, Vikings, and Browns. But, you know, it's pretty clear that the Cardinals and Titans are probably going to take quarterbacks with Locker and Palmer in question. You know, the Patriots might take a quarterback. So you're talking about that 7 and 8. And then one more 9. I bet, you know, teams who might have older quarterbacks, even like a Drew Brees, somebody might, you know, and the Saints might snatch up a quarterback.
There's
but
Tony
these
Romo,
9
the
guys.
Cowboys might look at a quarterback.
Well, yeah, that's true. The Cowboys, too, yeah. So, you know, that's what's, you know, depending on maybe if Mallett gets traded to one of these teams. But these 9, you know, 9 or 10 teams and these 9 quarterbacks from, you know, Garofalo to the big guys that are named, Logan Thomas, Tom Savage, Mettenberger. I'm so fascinated to see who's going to go where because I think even though there's no Andrew Luck or Griffin, I do think these quarterbacks are sort of they're guys that will play in the NFL. And I think maybe all 9 of them could play in the future. You know, I think even a Taj Boyd could be a starter.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, maybe so. I mean, we'll see. Quarterback play has not been so great. I mean, like you said, 64 quarterbacks, right? A lot of the backups are not that good. And so
yeah,
maybe Kirk Cousins gets a job. But, I mean, you got to believe that, like, these guys are going to stop getting chances, like Kevin Cobb and Sanchez and all this stuff. Hence, you see Nick Foles there.
Matt McGloin? You start seeing Matt McGloin and
Matt
Flynn are not really rocking your world?
Nah, dude. Jake Locker might lose his spot. If Ken Whisenhunt, the quarterback, you know, supposed whisperer, can, you know, get things going with Jake Locker, he'll keep a job. But if not, and gosh, you look back to that draft class, right, and we both said it, even though we didn't have Ray and Tay then, that Ponder and Gabbert were and Locker were sort of, you know, reaches at the time. You know, people were reaching.
Yeah, they
reaching.
Just changed the rules on how much you have to commit to a quarterback. So St. Louis is the last one paying a king's ransom to a number one overall pick quarterback.
Do they draft a quarterback eventually? Are you a believer in Sam Bradford? Do you think Jeff Fisher? He said he believes in him.
I used to be, just because the guy was, you know, accurate, and he was the next big thing out of Oklahoma, and he won his Heisman, and I thought he was the man. Now, to his defense, and this is sort of the Geno Smith argument, who I'm not sure is a starter in the NFL, but we'll see. He has had nobody around. I mean, just this year, Zach Stacy was the best offensive player that he's had on his team. And that's not to disrespect Zach Stacy, but that's not enough for me to let you know if this guy's a legitimate quarterback.
Right, right. But look, it's a good start, right, with Tavon Austin and Jared Cook. Now you need to get some more people around him. Chris Givens and Brian Quick and Stephen Bailey, they're all like at best two or three receivers. Tavon Austin's like a two or three in the slot. So go get him a real number one. Kenny Britt might develop. Go draft. I think you got to take Sammy Watkins.
If he's there, they would drool to get him, but I don't think he'll be there.
Well, they draft two. Where's he going to go? He'll be there at two.
Well, I don't think they want to take him at two. I think at two they'll take Robinson or if Clowney's there. So I don't think they'll take Sammy Watkins that high. I think Sammy Watkins.
Well,
let's
talk some hoops, man. Let's talk some hoops.
We got our caller right now. Hello,
Ian.
Caller.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Ian, what's up? How are you? Long time no speak. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great.
We're good. We're good, man. Listen, Ian, let's jump right on into it. Thank you for joining us on Ray and Tay today. And listen, it had to happen. We knew it was going to happen. But I think I'll say this for the majority of Knicks fans that I know, everybody is a little sad to see Woody go. But I think everybody's at the point where we're going to give our faith to Phil Jackson that he's going to get this right. Whether it's him, you know, staying upstairs or coming down or whatever, Steve Kerr, whatever. But what's the window in terms of him hiring this new coach? Maybe, you know, I know you said maybe it will be done by the end of the week. But also in terms of what type of contract do you think in terms of years? Because he's there for five, supposedly. If it's Steve Kerr and Jim Clemens or whoever, how long of a contract will they get? And is there, do you think, any threat? Or would there have to be something in the contract that Phil does not come down because the fans, you know, are unhappy and want him to coach again? What are your thoughts on that and your insights on who it will be and how long of a deal they might get?
Well, the standard coaching contract these days seems to be 2 years with an option in the third year. So I would anticipate, you know, based on Phil's five-year deal, that length of a contract. And I don't think that anyone who Phil brings in, unless something falls through with Steve and he brings in a big-name coach, I don't think any of the guys that we're talking about now has enough clout to make any demands on what Phil can and cannot do. So I don't think that would be included in any deal. I do think that if Kerr is the guy and if he decides that he's ready to jump in and take the job, that it will happen rather quickly. And I think that this thing would only drag on if Kerr turns down the Knicks, and the Knicks have to go elsewhere to find a coach for next season.
Okay. Ian, let me ask you about Carmelo. Obviously, everybody in New York wants to know about Carmelo. So it's the first year he's out of the playoffs, and of course, in his draft class, you have the big three in Miami and Darko. You know, Milicic, all of those guys have championship rings. So he's probably thinking to himself, you know, I've hopefully hit rock bottom. So a couple questions with Carmelo. One, what do you think is going to be his decision-making? What's going to weigh most importantly on him? And two, is there any talk about him staying for another year and then opting out next year? So opting in 14 and then, you know, rolling the dice in 15.
Yeah, well, to answer your first question, I think that, you know, based on the money Carmelo's made and based on the total sum in each of the contracts that he can make, whether he signs with the Knicks or another team, he said money is not going to be a huge factor. I think that if he has to place factors in order of importance at the top of the list would be winning, and then maybe money is second. So I think winning, putting him in a position where he can contend year in and year out is of the utmost importance to Carmelo. So that's what I think people should be thinking about when they try to analyze and wrap their minds around Carmelo's free agency situation. And as far as waiting a year and opting out in 14-15 or after 14-15, we got a chance to talk to Carmelo last week, and he was asked that question, and he said, you know, he's considered all his options. That's an option that he's considered, but he thinks at this time that opting out on July 1 is his best option.
Okay. So we're into the playoffs. Obviously, Carmelo and our Knicks are out, but we're in the playoffs. 5 of the 8 series, and if Dallas hadn't blown that big lead, it would have been 6. Road teams won game 1, which is pretty incredible. What do you think, who's got the best chance, or which two teams do you think have the best chance to upset in the first round, which two lower-seeded teams?
You know what? Based on the early returns, I like what I've seen from Toronto. I think that game one, you know, obviously, I'm sorry, I meant to say I like what I've seen with the Nets, with
Brooklyn
in the Toronto series, because they had a strong performance in game one. And that's a veteran team, right? So you're talking about a team with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett that has won a million playoff games, and a team that is very deep. So I think that's one matchup that I'm definitely looking at as far as upsets go. And, you know, I have to think that Indy is on extremely shaky ground. I mean, I'm not going out on a limb here when I say that, because they look bad in game one. They've looked bad for a month. It's not a fluke at this point. They've established that they're really not anywhere near the level that they were earlier in the season, and they're a young team, so it's not like they have a bunch of veterans that can bring them out of this hole in a short period of time. So I think they're in trouble as well.
Okay.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, if you're an Indiana fan and they focused on, you know, getting the one seed, you got to be nervous, because the Hawks are playing their butts off, even with Al Horford. So, you know, great coaching job, and their players are really solid. So, Ian, I know you're busy, and thank you for joining us. Ian, you know, coming on from ESPNNewYork.com and, you know, updating everybody on SportsCenter with the Knicks. Final question, Ian, I got to ask you, to give our listeners and Knicks fans all over some real hope, not just for 2014, but even 2015, what do you think that Phil has got to do to not make this next season like a dead season? So even if you're bringing in Melo, can you use the expiring contract of Amari, whether it's at the deadline or whatever, to move him to, you know, a team that is either looking for a veteran that wants to get that money off, whether it's to Cleveland or Minnesota? Do they move Chandler? What do you think are his sort of pieces or his little secret gems to really build up this team to really entice Melo? Because I think Melo wants to stay and win in New York, but I think Phil's going to have to do something major. Do you have any insights or any thoughts? What do you think he might do to sort of tweak this roster, you know, not just waiting for 15 when everybody comes off the books?
Well, I think you make a good point when you say these guys could be moved at the trade deadline, the expiring contracts. I think that's much more realistic than if they were to be moved over the summer, because come February 20th or whenever the date of the 2015 trade deadline is set, the team that receives those guys will only have to pay a fraction of the salary. So it's not like they'll be having to stomach, you know, the $23 million owed to Amari Stoudemire or the $14 million owed to Tyson Chandler. It'll be a fraction of that. So I think it's more realistic to think that those guys can be dealt then. And also, when you think about this summer, I mean, we've seen Phil kind of establish a little bit of an MO by bringing in Lamar Odom. Lamar Odom's a guy he brought in on the cheap, low risk, high reward, a guy who knows the triangle, a guy who he has a relationship with. So the Knicks aren't going to have much money to spend this year. They'll have veterans minimum contracts to throw out there. They'll have a taxpayer exception. So those are the only tools by which Phil will be able to attract free agents. So he's going to look for guys who he has relationships with, guys who he has a history with, a guy who he knows what he is going to bring to the table. So I don't think he's going to take many risks. He doesn't have the money to do so. I think those are the things that you can expect this offseason.
Sounds great, Ian. Thanks, man. We're looking forward to it. Listen, do you got a champion for us? Can the Heat three-peat or what?
I still like Miami, despite, you know, the stops and starts throughout the season. I will still still ride with them until I see somebody slay the beast, so to speak.
Yeah, well, if they make it, that's four straight NBA Finals. We haven't seen that since the Celtics of the 60s and 70s. So, wow, that'd be we got a lot to look forward to between now and June.
Absolutely. It should be fun.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Ian.
Really
keep up the great work on ESPN, and thanks so much for joining us, Ian. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Ian Begley from ESPNNewYork.com, the Knicks insider, and, man, he brings it to you. He's been all over SportsCenter today. The Knicks breaking news of Mike Woodson being fired, and he comes on and joins Ray and Tay today. That right
breaking
there
it
is
down.
Big.
I love it. I love it. Ian
yeah.
Begley. Check him out on ESPN. He's a great writer, and he breaks stories. He's you know, an insider there, and breaks it down for a lot of the New York sports teams, but specifically for the Knicks.
Oh yeah, no, he's the guy for you know, ESPN New York, and for, you know, now he's, you know, coming on ESPN a lot, and, you know, doing live interviews and stuff like that. So Ian's great, and he's a friend of the show, and really great for him to join us. And he took us right where we needed to go, and it's to the NBA playoffs. Let's look at yesterday's games first. And we go back to Saturday when the playoffs started. Like you said, road Warriors win 5 out of 3. 5 road teams win. Could have been 6. You look about yesterday. I guess we could start with last night, man. Kudos to the Blazers. I mean, to you know, foul Howard, missing free throws. Mikhail's got to take them in and out. They go to overtime. Aldridge with a key bucket. Lillard played great. I mean, when your two best players are where Howard and Harden get 27 apiece, that's nice. That's nice. But when you got Lillard dropping, what, his first playoff game, 31, and then LaMarcus, 46 and 18? I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, the problem is here's the problem.
Amazing.
Neither of these teams are going anywhere because they don't defend. And so it's a good matchup because they're both offensive teams, and they'll both shoot each other, you know, into games and out of games. If you're Houston, you really have to be worried about Dwight Howard and Omer Asik being on the court because that free throw disadvantage, everybody these days is taking advantage of it. And they don't get very creative in their offensive sets. It's really just give the ball at the end of the games. It's really just give the ball to James Harden and hope that he's got enough energy to, you know, to create on his own. And if you make James Harden defend and you make him expend some energy, then maybe in the fourth quarter and in overtime it'll be less effective. So it was a very entertaining game. So in some ways,
yeah,
I was excited to see Dame Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge do their things. But these two teams are just, they're not going anywhere. I mean, if you look at the rest of the Western Conference, how much more playoff-ready these other teams are, and I don't think these two teams can go anywhere, frankly.
Well, I'll say this. If Houston, they have the potential to play better defense, and I like defensively Beverly. I like Parsons. You know, Terrence Jones, if he puts the effort, could play a little bit in Howard. But, you know, it's hard when Lynn is on the floor and, you know, Harden, he sometimes plays D. But if they can get past the Blazers, and I think that they match up well with the Spurs, I've got to tell you, I think, you know, I predicted it, but I really think that they could, you know, the ball bounces the right way, and Howard has to step up. Shaq gets on him. But, yeah, he needs to dominate Aldridge and Robin Lopez, and he needs to dominate, if he gets there, Tim Duncan. And Tiago Splitter, you know, and get you 26, 28, 13, 14, whatever. You know, I think he could do it. So, I don't know.
That's
so that was a great
dominating
game. I think
that's
you're right
close
about –
that's close to his career averages, you know.
Yeah,
he's
no, no,
22
and
12 for his career.
Yeah, no, he's, you know, I think Howard could dominate more than he does, and I don't like that little move, you know, with the little running hook into to the post. It's not that strong. He's got to be more physical. I think sometimes he either rushes or he waits too late for double teams. But you're right, that offense needs more flow. I took the Rockets. You took the Blazers. Blazers steal game one. Kudos to them. And, you know, I love Lillard and Aldridge, so I'm happy for the Blazers. So then what did you think about the Spurs? Or no, the Wizards. Let's talk about the Wizards. The Wizards.
Go see the Wizard. I tell you what,
yo,
if Nene is healthy, if Nene is healthy, they could give Chicago some problems because Chicago can't score on a regular basis as much as the Wizards can. And so if you can get offensive production from Gortat, Nene, and then you throw in a Trevor and John Wall. By the way, we need to give Trevor Ariza some credit for just being a veteran who delivers. He's sort of the and they
play
funny because they both came from UCLA. He's kind of the Matty Barnes, you know, type of player. Skinny,
lean,
6'7", 6'8", you know, guy who can go around, defend a 2, a 3, a 4, can run the break. You know, he's a great contributor. You know, he started with the Knicks.
Isaiah Thomas drafted him, right? Started with the Knicks.
Freshman out of UCLA. I tell you what, give him credit. He is the guy that causes problems, right? He's remember that game? You know, he can get up in LeBron. He can get up in James Harden. He's a guy that he's just a good, solid, talented player. And with the emergence of John Wall, and if Nene's healthy, I tell you what, Chicago really, really needs that offensive punch from Carmelo or Derrick Rose or both. But I'm saying Chicago,
I
predicted them to win this series, but they're in trouble.
Two interesting stats, right? Number one, I like Gortat, you know, getting on the boards, 13. Bradley Beal giving you 7 assists. But everybody talks about what the Bulls and Noah does or whatever. But here's the problem. Noah is leading them in every category. So he only, you know, he scored 16. He had 10 rebounds, 4 assists. But if your center is getting the highest assists and he was leading a team with 4 assists, what does that say about your point guard play? What does it say about what Heinrich and the guards are doing? To me, you're right. I think Chicago's offense is – I mean, look, they need Rose, and they also could use Melo. But they're in trouble because if Gortat and Nene sort of equal out Noah and Boozer and Gibson, and maybe I think they need to play Gibson more. They always go for, you know, Noah and play Boozer more. Noah and Gibson and let Boozer go in the first quarter, in the first half, and, you know, he's more of a defensive liability. But you know what? You need to score and maybe get Nene and Gortat in foul trouble. So I think Boozer needs to get some more minutes. But I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Wall and Beal. And the Wizards are fun. This is going to be a battle series because, you know, the Bulls, they're not going anywhere.
He's definitely not going anywhere. Now, let me ask you something. Speaking of not going anywhere, the Bobcats, I got to get my jersey, but the Bobcats and the Heat. Now, when Al Jefferson was healthy in the first half, they were tied.
They were
right?
giving
they
him the
very
business,
well.
Yeah.
Now, but I hear that Al Jefferson had to get treatment on his foot, and he's got the plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
If Al Jefferson is hurt,
it's a wrap.
Can Charlotte
wrap.
Win a
they'll
game?
Get swept. No, they'll get swept, and it's a shame. And I think with a healthy Al, they can only get one game. But, you know, the Heat woke up. I mean, let's be honest. They were sort of like Ray, right? Ray kept saying, wake me up in April. Well, the Heat, they could have won 60 games, but they didn't try, and they were resting Wade and conserving him and doing what they needed to do. And, you know, if LeBron's getting 27, Wade's dropping his, 23, you know, you get a couple of 5 assists from Wade, and you got Birdman on the boards with 10.
10
you
rebounds,
know, the Heat are going to be fine. They're going to be fine. This isn't really much of a contest. This is just a way to practice and rev it up. I'd like to see Bosch get some, you know, do a little bit more work. I think he had like 13, get more involved in the offense because they're going to need him. They're going to need him. And, I tell you, your boy, Josh McRoberts dropped 15 and 7. So he was trying to help.
I'll tell you what, occasionally
Kemba.
Josh McRoberts can be unstoppable. So, you know,
he's actually not had a bad
game. Josh McRoberts can be unstoppable. Don't disrespect.
Don't sleep on
the
Dukies.
The most interesting game maybe of that
day,
I guess the late game and the early game. San Antonio and Dallas.
Oof,
so Dallas was hanging real tough.
Had them on the ropes.
Couldn't defend the pick and roll, but then again, they were scoring on San Antonio until San Antonio goes on a 19-4, 15-0 run in the fourth quarter, and basically
that Spurs defense
is you know I don't want to say lucky because, you know, you're a number one seed, so you obviously won, what, 62, 63 games, so they're not lucky.
Right.
San Antonio was on the
road.
Well,
it's not lucky when you – but look, it's not lucky when you lock down Nowitzki and Ellis and they both only score 11 points. You can't have Harris being, you know, your leading scorer and assist guy. He had 19, 5 assists. You know, I mean, to me, that was the game in a nutshell. When you lock down even Vince Carter – Dirk and Monte. Monte and Dirk both score over 20 a game basically this year. So if you're holding them to 11, there's no way Dallas can win. But I'll tell you this, Brandon Wright plays ball, and he's a good matchup, I think, for Dallas and their size to potentially give.
Well,
they're going to win some games in a series.
He was number six overall, right? So he was a young stud coming out of Carolina. He just took, you know, half a decade off. But, you know, if this guy wakes up and lives up to that talent that made him a McDonald's All-American, then why not? I tell you what, you could look at the glass half full or glass half empty. If you're Dallas, you think to yourself, wait a minute, our two best players and even Vince Carter didn't really play well, and we should have won that game. So if we get a normal Dirk performance, then we're fine. We're fine against this team.
I think the Spurs could be in some trouble, and that's why I'm telling you. Even if they get past this series, they're going to have to fight and scrap to get back to the Western Conference Finals or to get back to the NBA Finals. Either one, the Spurs, it's not going to be easy. But you know, you worry about Duncan. He went out, he came back, but he said he was fine. Look, one thing I say: the big fundamentals. You talk about Hall of Fame, and you know, he gives you a solid 27 points like it's nothing. He's a beast. Tim Duncan's a beast.
So listen, keeping it in the West and speaking about teams that are in trouble, how much trouble on a scale of 1 to 10 are the Clippers in, given that they lost?
Game two is tonight, so we'll find out in a couple of hours. But you're right. I got to tell you, Ray, look, that was – you can't – your second best player, Griffin – he can't foul out, and he can't play 19 minutes. So, one, Doc's got to trust him if he gets in foul trouble to keep him on the court, because that's where you can dominate the Warriors is with your size, because without Bogut, the Warriors are going to the smaller lineup. They're getting clutch minutes from Jermaine O'Neal. David Lee's doing his thing. But I told you, I like the fact that, you know, in some matchups not having Bogut, because when you go with Barnes playing a little bit of the four with AI, with Iguodala, they're deadly. And if Klay Thompson is on with Curry, the Warriors are a tough team. The Warriors are a tough team. And I think the Clippers made some poor mistakes in that game that really, really hurt them. I got to give CP3 his credit. He stepped up. But I got to tell you, he's got to take some knocks. If they get bumped in this series, people need to start ripping Chris Paul. They like to rip Melo, but Chris Paul has not had a better playoffs in his career than Carmelo has had.
Right, and this
Chris
is not
Paul
a talent issue. He's got plenty of talent up and down that roster.
Yeah, 28-8 for Chris Paul. He was legit. And your boy Jordan had 14 boards, but still, man, the Warriors. Hey, how about David Lee? How about a team of former Knicks? You talk about Ariza and Lee, and you know, there's former Knicks all over that, you know, could make, you know, Zach Randall make one heck of a roster.
Isaiah Thomas, if there's one thing he could do, is he could draft.
Yeah.
So, you know,
he could draft and he could score on you and drop 42 in one leg. Yo, the bad boy.
You finally watched it, right? Great.
It was great.
I had my heart warmed up. I was going to go out and get a Bad Boys T-shirt.
So let's
finish out the West.
Let's keep it moving.
Grizzlies and the Thunder. So can the Grizzlies win? Can the Grizzlies beat the Thunder? And if so, what do the Grizzlies need to do to actually win this series?
My problem is they lost their backup point guard, the kid from Florida, Nick Calathes or whatever, for some sort of substance, banned substance. I liked him. He was coming in, giving them some like 3 or 4 assists, 10, 12 points. Mike Miller's going to have to step up, but the problem is they don't have enough offense. When Westbrook and Durant are basically just scoring animals And, you know, Durant has 7 assists. Westbrook's got 10 rebounds, 33 points for Durant. It's too much. It's too much because the Grizzlies, yeah, they made the big run in the third quarter. Zach had 21. But guess what? They have to work so hard for their baskets. The Grizzlies don't get fast break points, and they don't get easy offense, and even their three-point shots are contested. So they'll keep you, you know, they'll even when they go on a run, they keep you in the game because they don't get any fast break points. They're like the Knicks. You got to get easy hoops in the NBA. Sometimes you got to push it and force it. They do go to the foul line, so that helps. But, look, Conley, he's good, and I think he's part of their big three. Gasol, Conley, and Randolph have got to get over 60 points a game, and that's a lot. You need 20 each or 20-plus each from those three guys for them to win it. And they wanted to trade Rudy Gay, and they did, but Tayshaun Prince can't do anything offensively. So, to me, the Grizzlies can't score enough. They'll be lucky to get one game.
We talked about the Nets-Raptors a little bit with Ian, and even though the Raptors are a 3-seed, I think not many people would be surprised if the Nets won this series, and
how
the
about
Nets
Paul
may
Pierce?
Have the best closer in
wow.
you know in the game right now. So
what a Hall
Paul
of Famer.
Pierce wants the
he's,
ball and delivers.
He's clutch. He's like, that's why they brought me here. That's what I'm here for. Can I tell you, Paul Pierce makes old guys want to suit up and just go back out on the court and just drop a bucket. Ray, I'm going to tell you, they're going to win this series. And I love Lowry. DeRozan and Ross were shook, the young guys. Valanciunas played great. You know, he was scoring. He was, you know, rebounding like crazy. But the Nets are too much. And the young, you got Karolanko off the bench, but Plumlee's too much. And don't forget about Marcus Thornton coming in, and he can score. And, you know, Livingston and Darren Williams playing off the ball. That's the best move the Nets ever made. Jason Kidd is doing one heck of a coaching job. So kudos to Kidd. Brooklyn, stand up. And they might win this in 5.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Because think about it. The Nets shot poorly from three-point land. If they would have been hitting their threes, this game would have been wiped out. I don't know if the Raptors can stop them.
Such a huge home country advantage. and then the final one. The Pacers. We're all waiting, at least I am anyway, for the Pacers to wake up, to just get out of their coma and just, you know, turn it on. But apparently, it's not that easy in the NBA. And we talked about this on our last show. We should have called it the boxing show. Matchups make fights, and matchups make basketball series. And the Hawks are not afraid, and the Hawks are a bad matchup with the small lineup. The Hawks are a bad matchup for the Pacers.
I'll just say this, the Pacers are in trouble. They're in trouble, and we'll see what happens. I think they come back, Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll see what happens, but 101-93, that was impressive, and this is without Al Horford. That was impressive. I think they're going to have to bench Hibbert, let David West start at center, go with a small lineup, maybe put Evan Turner in there, let Paul George play the four, do something. They're going to have to try to mix it up to, you know, match the Hawks. But give Millsap and Teague a lot of credit.
Jeff
and
Teague,
let's just
coming
go.
Home.
This is the perfect segue, man. We're about to wrap it up. Let's wrap it up with our segment, Champs and Chumps. And I'm going to stay right here. My first champs, I think we're going to go both probably positive. My first champs, I'm staying in NBA. My champs are the Atlanta Hawks of the weekend. It's Jeff Teague, 28-5. The Hawks, Damari Carroll played great. The Hawks are my champs, along with Teague specifically, because he controlled the game, the pace. 28 on that Pacers defense. He George Hill, Stevenson, nobody could stop him. And to me, I just got to give the Hawks so much props for the way they play. So my champs are the Atlanta Hawks, and they might upset this series.
My champ, even though he fouled out on a silly foul, is LaMarcus Aldridge. 46 points and 18 rebounds playing against Houston in Houston. The guy came out of Texas. They thought he was a little soft. He played in the Western Conference where all the power forwards were and slowly but surely got better every year. And his Trailblazers won 54 games. Now, give Dame Lillard a lot of credit, too, because he finished the game and he sealed the deal, you know, in overtime. But LaMarcus Aldridge, what a game. What a player. That's my champ of the weekend.
Well, we normally do a chump, but we're going positive for the Boston Marathon and just the whole thing. My other champs are the Milwaukee Brewers. We touched on it in baseball, the best record in baseball, 14-5, and you know what? Across the board, it's Amaris Ramirez batting .352. It's six homers from Ryan Braun. I mean, you've got, you know, mad ribbies coming in from Ramirez. Already got 15 ribbies, just smacking it up. Guy's got great on-base percentage. Ramirez, .403. The pitching is great. I think that what you're seeing here is a team that has been kicked and knocked down, and they're ready to at least get a wild card, if not win this division. And I just got to say, they are definitely my champs of the weekend. They won three in a row over Bay. All these guys are hitting. The pitching is really been doing really great. And you know, you gotta give the Brewers you gotta give them some props.
Yeah, for sure, So my chump,
impressive.
I'm turning it into
Okay, let's get positive.
For the city of Boston, the Boston Marathon. Going off without a hitch, 3,600 officers. But you know what? More than anything, what impressed me is 36,000 runners, 9,000 more than last year. So people came out and represented and said, you know what? I want to run in this marathon.
I want to be Boston strong.
Kudos to Boston. Kudos to everybody in that city. Kudos to everybody who went up there to represent and to run in that marathon, and just awesome. I mean, kudos to them.
Maybe we should honor them. We should run around the block.
That's about the endurance
should get the
that
video
I have. I can't run
Ray and Tay run around the block, and we upload it, man. So, nah, you're right. Great. It was great, and kudos to them. Great show. Thank you for having, everybody tuning in, listening to Ian. If you want to check the podcast, if you missed us live, check us out at iTunes, Ray and Tay Today. Go to rayandtaytoday.com, and you can listen. And, we're out. We'll be back strong Friday. I think the NFL schedule will be announced, so we'll look at that. We get excited about these games, start looking at fantasy football drafts with that stuff and the schedule. Everybody's like, yo, I'm going to pick pick this team, the defense for the bye weeks, and get, you got to get organized. You got
to
get organized. I'm taking down a championship. So.
All right. So we had a great time with you. Hopefully you enjoyed your sports with us.
Two good games tonight.
On Friday.
NBA playoffs. Ray and Tay Today.
Ray and
Tay. Talking sports with friends.
We're out.